So we're here on Daf Chaf Dalet Amid Beis. We're learning the fourth perek of Sota, and we're discussing the case of Shomeres Yavam. And let's just quickly recap what a Shomeres Yavam is all about. Her husband died, leaving no children, but he left a brother. And she falls for Yibum to her brother-in-law. At this point, the relationship, the bond between her and her brother-in-law, which is called Zika, is a kind of a marriage relationship. It's not exactly your normal marriage relationship. Normally, a marriage relationship requires an action in order to create that marriage. Here, it sort of falls from heaven, if you will. And she becomes a married woman, needing, if she has to get married to someone else, a get. The moment that he, the Yavam, has an intimate relationship with her. The case that we're addressing here in our Gemara is where that intimacy was not performed for the sake of culminating Yibum, but rather was done as a matter of znus, of promiscuity. He had no interest at this moment to be kona her, to acquire her as a wife. He was just, shall we say, fooling around, if you know what I mean. We call it in my language, hanky-panky. So either you know what I mean by that or you don't, but hopefully you'll get the point. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens after this intimacy between the Yavam and the Yavama? So that's a matter of a debate between Rav and Shmuel. Rav is of the opinion that it's irrelevant. When I say irrelevant, I mean nothing changes by virtue of the fact that his intention was this way or that way. Even in a case of a promiscuous act on his part, that is Yibum. That clinches the relationship and she's a full-fledged Eishes Ish. And Shmuel comes along and he says no. Shmuel comes along and says she's still not a full-fledged Eishes Ish. So here's the example. Shmuel would say that if the Yavam had this promiscuous relationship with the Yavama, and let's say in this case the Yavam was a Kohen, and she is a Bas Yisrael, her father is not a Kohen, then she doesn't eat truma. Normally, a woman who's married to a Kohen eats truma. But the exception to the rule, says Shmuel, is the case where this marriage of a Yavam to Yavama took place with promiscuity, with an act of znus. And in that sense, she's a little bit less than a full-fledged Eishes Ish. So the Gemara now wants to claim that the difference between Rav and Shmuel is going to impact on Sota. How so? Let's say, for example, the Shomeres Yavam received what's called kinui from the Yavam. The Yavam said, I don't want you to go privately with that man. And she violated that kinui, and she had stira. And now the question is, do we take her to the Beis HaMikdash and we have a drink, the bitter waters that we call Tamayim HaMararim? And this is going to be dependent upon Rav and Shmuel. Why? According to Rav, in this particular scenario, the Yavam had an intimate relationship with the Yavama, and she becomes a full-fledged Eishes Ish. She's a married woman. A chalitza, for example, would no longer be relevant because she needs a get. And if she's a full-fledged Eishes Ish, there's no reason why she shouldn't be drinking the Mei Mararim. Why is she different than any violator of Kinyan and Stira? But if we hold like Shmuel, then when the Torah says Tachas Isha, which means that the Parsh of Sota and the Mei Mararim only applies when she is Isha, she is his wife, well, Shmuel is saying she's a little bit less than his wife. Now, what's the deal with the Shomeres Yavam? Does she drink or does she not drink in the case of Kinyan and Stira? Well, that is a machlokas between the Mishnah, our Mishnah here at the beginning of the fourth perek, and the Braisa of Rav Yoshia. Our Mishnah says that there are two ladies that don't drink because their marriage relationship is not complete. One is an Arusa, and we had a long discussion about that. We're not going over that now. And the second is Shomeres Yovan. However, the Braisa records a Shita of Rav Yoshia, and Rav Yoshia is of the opinion that there's a separate Ribui that includes a Shomeres Yovan. That Shomeres Yovan is included in the Parsha of Sota, so, and she drinks from the Memorim if there was Kini and Stira. The Gemara points out that the entire scenario that we're talking about in this debate between Rav Yonason and Rav Yoshia is a case where he, the Yovan, had a promiscuous relationship with her, because we need something called Kadma Be'ilas Habal Le'Be'ilas Haboel, meaning that in the law of Sota, we only have a Sota who drinks for the Memororim if she had already, at least on one occasion, an intimate relationship with her husband, and then subsequently we suspect she had this adulterous relationship. So in order to talk about a Yavam and having his Yavama through Kini and Stira drink from the Memororim, we're going to have to assume that he, the Yavam, had already had this intimate relationship. It was Kadma Be'ilas Baal and Be'ilas Boel. And then we have to ask ourselves the question, okay, all the stage is set for her, the Yavama in this case, to drink from the Memororim, except for one problem. And that is that it's not Tachas Isha. So the Mishnah says this is not called Tachas Isha, because he may have had this promiscuous relationship, the Yavam, with the Yavam, but she's still living elsewhere. She's not in his jurisdiction, if you want to call it that. And the Gemara says that we have a Braisa that Rav Yoshia disagrees with our Mishnah. Rav Yoshia was a Tana, and he has the right, he has the authority to disagree with the Mishnah. And in the Braisa, his opinion is recorded to say that she, the Shomeres Yavam, will drink from the Memorarim. She's a full-fledged member of that group called the Sota group. Full-fledged membership. Says the Gemara, this all depends upon Rav and Shmuel. If you are like Rav, then Rav Yoshia makes a lot of sense, because Rav was of the opinion that after this promiscuous relationship between the Yavam and the Yavama, she's a full-fledged married woman. And therefore she has the same status as any Sota, and therefore she'll drink from the Memororim. However, if you're all like Shmuel, this Shomeres Yavam is a little bit less than a full-fledged married woman, and therefore she doesn't drink from Sota, and therefore Shmuel would reflect the Shita of Rav Yonason in the Braisa, which is the Shita of our Mishnah. So let's look inside now. We're on Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis, and we're up to the word Lema Rav. So if you count from the bottom of the page, on Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis, we'll count up four lines. 1, 2, 3, 4. And the line begins with the word Hachi. And it says the following. Lema, the second word in the fourth line before the end of the Amid. Lema, shall we say that Rav, the Amar Karav Yoshia, Ushmuel, the Amar Karav Yonason. Meaning, that we can do what I call matching. Matching means when you have two different debates and you can align one opinion in one debate with one opinion in the other, and so forth and so on. So we have a debate between Rav and Shmuel. What's the status of a Yavama after this promiscuous relationship? Rav maintains that she has a full-fledged status as a married woman with no exceptions. And Shmuel says no. She hasn't yet reached the level of a full Yibum situation, because this Yibum was not done for the sake of Yibum. This Yibum was done for the sake of pleasure. And therefore Shmuel says that she still cannot eat truma, and even though her Yavam is a Kohen, just like, and by the way, she's very used to eating truma. How do I know she's used to eating truma? Because her brother was a Kohen, right? The Yavam can't be a Kohen unless her former husband, her deceased husband was a Kohen. No way. You can't have two brothers that aren't Kohen. That one is a Kohen, one is not. So anyway, she's very used to eating truma. I'm just pointing that out. You won't see that here in any of the commentaries. But just to dramatize. So now she wants, you know, once her husband dies, she goes back to her father's house or whatever it is. She's no longer married to a Kohen, and she cannot eat truma. However, after Yibum, to the other brother, he's also a Kohen, she can eat truma. What about after this promiscuous Yibum? So that, says Shmuel, that's not enough. She cannot eat truma. The relationship is not a full-fledged Yibum relationship. So now the Gemara says, Lema Rav Yoshia Lema, what's the language? Gemara, Rav Diomek Rav Yoshi. Rav Yoshi was the one who said that El Shomeres Yovam, like any other woman, any other married woman, after Kinyan Stira, drinks through the Parsha Sota, drinks from Mei Merarim. That's going to apply here, based on Rav, in the case of a promiscuous relationship between the Yavama and the Yavam, because that clinches the relationship, and that's, for all intents and purposes, that is Yivum. And once she has Yibum, then she's going to drink from the Mei Merarim. So what sense do we make out of Rav Yonasan? Right, Rav Yonasan, the Gemara says, can only make sense if you're like Shmuel. Shmuel Diomar, ki Rav Yonasan. Shmuel was the one who says that after this promiscuous relationship, she still retains her status as a Shomeres Yavam, meaning she's still waiting for Yibum. Because Yibum has to be an intimacy that was done for the purpose of
Yibum.
And according to Shmuel, since that hasn't occurred yet, she's less than a full-fledged Eishes Ish. She's not fully married. And that would be reflected by the Shita of Rabbi Yonasan, because Rabbi Yonasan, as our Mishnah already stated, Tachas Yishech Lafuki, comes to exclude the case of Shomeres Yavam, which is a case where the Yavam, had this promiscuous relationship with the Yavama. Now, in this structure, the Gemara is a little bit upset. Why? Because we don't want to box people into a corner. We don't want to say that Rav could only make sense if he holds like Rav Yoshia, Shmuel could only make sense if he holds like Rav Yonasan. We'd like to have more freedom of thought. Amalecha Rav, so the Gemara says that Rav could claim, I can square off with Rabbi Yonasan. And why is that? Because if you recall, Rabbi Yonasan had a special pasuk tachas ishech to exclude Shomeres Yavam. So since he needed that pasuk, apparently he held that without that pasuk, she, the Shomeres Yavam, after this promiscuous relationship, would be considered a full-fledged Eishes Ish, and she should drink from the Mei Merarim. But the pasuk came along and told me to exclude her from the parsha of Mei Merarim, of drinking the waters. Michlal, we see from that, the very fact that we needed a pasuk, we would have said without the pasuk, the ishto ma'al yisahi, she's a full-fledged Eishes Ish. And now we turn to Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. Ushmuel Omar, and Shmuel from his perspective can say, Anot Amri afil l'Rabbi Oshia. I could work out even according to Rabbi Oshia. How so? It's a crawler rebuye. If you remember, Rav Yoshi had a special rebuye of ish, if you remember. And he used that rebuye, that inclusion, to include Shomeres Yavam, Michlal, we see by implication, Delav Ishtohi, Klal. That if not for the special rebuye, she would not be considered a full-fledged Eishes Ish. And that's my understanding, says Shmuel, that, for example, as we said before, if she's a Bas Yisrael and he, the Yavam, is a Kohen, she doesn't have the rights to eat the Truma. Mm-hmm. And now we start Iboilu. This is really the new Gemara that I wanted to start for today, but I wasn't able to fit in all that I just said in yesterday's discussion, so we had to fill that in. Iboilu, the Gemara now has a Suffolk. And this Suffolk, the Gemara vacillates about the status of Overes Aldas. Let's explain. In the laws of Ksuba, a married woman has rights to a Ksuba in event that her husband either dies or divorces, so she collects the Ksuba. Obviously, if he dies, she's not going to collect the Ksuba from him, but she'll collect the Ksuba from his estate. But she could also forfeit her Ksuba, which is exactly what happened in the case of Sota. As a result of Kidian Stira, where she violated his kinui, she loses her rights to a ksuba. But there's another way that a woman can lose her ksuba, and that's called overes al dos. Dos means what we call the accepted practice of Jewish tzniut, of modesty. Excellent. There's a code of Jewish modesty. For example, in Jewish modesty, a woman is not allowed to flirt with other men. In Jewish modesty, a woman is not to do certain things public that would expose parts of her body. In public, she's not allowed to expose her hair if she's a married woman. So in all these cases, if she's overes al das, and she violates the code of Jewish tzniut, of modesty, then that is grounds for halot losing the ksuba. However, the Gemara vacillates. When does that apply? Does she lose her ksuba automatically once she exhibits that kind, manifests that kind of loose behavior, or we have to give her a warning? Let me explain. In Jewish law, there's no such thing as punishment for a crime without a warning. Every crime has to be prefaced by a warning. And then the crime is made up of two elements. Number one, the actual maisa avera, the crime itself. And number two, the violation of a warning, of a hasra. Once a person gets a hasra, he gets a warning, and he violates that hasra, that upgrades his criminal act. It's more of a flagrant, how should I say, act of open rebellion. And that jacks it up by a couple of points and makes it punishable. However, in the case of Overis Aldas, we're not really sure if we need that extra element, those extra points of deliberate violation that requires Hasra. The Gemara now raises the possibility that even in the absence of Hasra, it's so built into the nature of a marriage relationship and the Jewish way of understanding marriage that we assume that her commitment and her allegiance and loyalty to the Jewish code of tzniut, of modesty, is such that she doesn't need a warning. The warning is unnecessary because it's built into the very nature of a Jewish marriage. You know, we always talk about Jewish marriage. What are the codes and the ethics of Jewish marriage? So for that, you'd have to learn Masechta Ksubis. That Masechta is all about the Ketubah. And all that Masechta deals with, not all of it, but I'm saying major chunks of that Masechta deal with what's called Das Yehudis. Das Yehudis means the practice of a Jewish woman in marriage. And those are the practices of modesty that are very, very fundamental. If she violates those practices, it means she doesn't deserve her ketubah. Now again, does she lose her ketubah because of punishment? Or does she lose her ketubah because of the very nature of her action? Her actions themselves speak louder than words, and they indicate that she does not deserve a ketubah. She's not included in Das Yehudis, in the way of Jewish marriage. If she has overstepped her bounds, again, whatever those bounds is, we'd have to learn Masechta Ksuvos. I just hope we can learn a little bit of Sota, so don't ask me to learn with you Masechta Ksuvos. But if you would learn that Masechta, you'd see what does it mean that she overstepped her bounds. You know, when did she flirt enough, or when did she expose her this, or expose her that? The Gemara talks about, for example, weaving. That weaving was very common in those days, and apparently with weaving, you know, you have to press on certain petals, yeah, you know. So, yeah, you know, when she presses on this petal and that petal, sometimes parts of her body, you know, get exposed. And I'm not going to go into details. So, if she does that in a public place in front of other men, it's considered as if she's, you know, kind of I don't know what to call it, but it's promiscuous behavior. So that kind of behavior alone takes her out of the ketubah. Or no, she's in the ketubah, and she deserves the ketubah unless she violates a warning, and then we'll penalize her for violating that warning, and then we will have her forfeit the ketubah. So that's our Gemara. Our Gemara really belongs to Masechta Ketubot. The reason it's here is the Gemara is going to quote our Mishnah to try to prove one way or the other in this suffix. But again, this suffix, you know, if you could cut out this Gemara and graft it onto Masechta Ketubot, no one would blink because it fits Masechta Ketubot like a glove. Overis Aldas, Tzricha Hasra Lahafsida Ksubaso, O Eino Tzricha Hasra. Does she need a warning? And only if we saw that she was kind of misbehaving a little bit, and then we gave her a warning, and we said to her, Mrs. So-and-so lady, you better shape up, because if you don't, you're on the verge, you're on the red line. If you cross the line by violating this warning, you will lose your Ksuba. What do you say?
And her husband can give her the warning? Or the
I don't know. I think the Gemara is going to say it depends whether the husband is capable or not. We're going to see cases in which the husband, maybe he's a bit deranged and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
He's incapable of giving the warning, and maybe the beitin in that case will step up to the plate, as we say, and they'll have to give the warning as if the husband were sane, you know, is working with all his marbles. But in any event, so that's the question. Me Amrinon, let's analyze the question. I'll answer questions in just a second. Me Amrinon, should we say Kevan Doveres Al Das? He, meaning she, is an Overes Al Das. Overes means she violates. She violates the basic code of Jewish modesty in marriage. Therefore, Lo Boy Hasra, she doesn't need a warning. Why? Because this is built into the very nature of marriage, and this is an inappropriate behavior. You know, the women's libbers, if they were here, they would start yelling and screaming, well, what about his behavior? What about is he such a tzaddik? Maybe he should also have an overes al das. So I'm going to see again, long sugyas, now we're not in Masechta Gittin, we're in Masechta Gittin. At what point does she have claim to a divorce? And she could demand that he divorce her because of his misbehavior. So again, that's just for the women's libbers, you know. That's why there's a lot of equality here between, you know, male husband behavior and demands and women and female. And it's very interesting because if he refuses to divorce his wife, the Gemara says we'll beat him blue in the face. Ian Williamsburg, but in any event, there is such a thing. I saw it here. I think I told you once in a Beis Din in Tel Aviv, they brought the guy in chains from the prison, because I'm talking before the next elections. What's going to be after the next elections? I don't know. But depends if you speak Russian or not. But anyway, up until today, and this goes back to the time Ben Gurion, because Ben Gurion understood that we can't have a totally secular state, even though he was secular. But there are people today who say that no, we have to have a totally secular state. But anyway, up to Ben Gurion's legacy, a woman could have recourse to throw her husband into jail. Not physically, she doesn't throw him into jail. The police will take care of that if he refuses to give her a divorce. But anyway, now we're talking about a case where she violated what's called the code what's it called in English? Of modesty. Again, remind me of that word, modesty, right? The code of modesty. And that takes her out of the pale of Ksuba. Ksuba is for Das Yehudis. The entire enterprise of Ksuba is for Jewish marriage. O Dilma, perhaps Tiboy Hasra. She must require. We need a warning. Why? Because perhaps as a result of the warning, which is always the case in a warning, Dihajabe she may do tshuva. And to Heather Bay, give her the opportunity to do tshuva. Okay, she overstepped her bounds here. She was flirting a little bit too much. Maybe she'll shape up. Give her that opportunity. Don't immediately condemn her as a violator of the Jewish code of modesty. So this is the Gemara vacillating back and forth about what? About Overes Al Das. Now, there's something a little bit strange here in this Gemara, and this is not my question, but the Rishon already mentioned this. You will never find the phrase Oferes Al Das alone. There's always an extra word, and for some reason it was omitted here in our Gemara, and that's Oferes Al Das Yehudis.
Mm-hmm.
Yehudis. Which means the code. Now let me try to explain what goes on over here. The code of Jewish modesty is made up of two different elements. One is biblical and one is rabbinic. One is Doraisa and one is Derabbanan. The word Yehudis indicates that we're talking about a rabbinic code of modesty. And the general, shall I say, the general application and relevance of Overes Al Das in Masechta Ksubis is even Das Yehudis, meaning she doesn't have to violate the Torah law of modesty, even if she violates various rabbinic standards of what Jewish marriage is all about and modesty thereof, that's enough to undermine her ketubah. And the funny thing is that the Gemara omitted the word Yehudit. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Does anybody remember the standard? And when I say standard, this is both for Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, the standard formula for marriage when you marry a woman. Who remembers that? Nobody?
Yes.
You do? Say it out loud.
Harayas mekadeshet li mitabat zo. Kedas Moshe
v'Yisrael.
Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. Why do we mention Moshe Rabbi? You know, it's very nice. I'm a big fan. I love Moshe Rabbeinu. But why is Moshe Rabbeinu mentioned in the context? Did you ever think about this?
D'oraisa.
Hare at Mekudeshes Li.
Right.
Most Rabbanim in America, I don't know where it is elsewhere in the world, they'll say it word by word. The Rav HaMasada Kiddush will say it word by word.
Till a certain point.
The reason they do that is because they don't want to embarrass a chas. Not every chas. And I'll tell you the truth. Even a chassan is a great scholar. When he's under the chuppah, he is totally, totally overwhelmed. He gets confused. So you know the famous story. The Rav says, Hare. So he says, Hare. At, Mekudeshes. And then he says, Seili. So he says, Seili. You should say Li. And instead he said, Seili. Because it's very important that he says Li, because otherwise you might think that he's a shliach and he's marrying off on behalf of someone else. But what's Moshe Rabbeinu doing over here? So the Rishonim point out that the Minhag Yisrael to mention Moshe is because there's Das Torah and then there's Das Moshe. What does Moshe add? Moshe represents the rabbinic institutions of marriage. And
Sheval Peh?
I don't know exactly if it's Torah Sheval Peh. I would say it goes even beyond Torah Sheval Peh, meaning Torah Sheval Peh might be even without Moshe. You know, that's Das Yisrael. That's already given by the Torah, already not in the written Torah, but in the oral Torah. But Moshe Rabbeinu has all sorts of enactments. And that's what the Ksuba, we paskin, again, this is a machlokas in the Gemara, gigantic machlokas, where the Ksuba is Doraisa, Drabbanon. We generally accept the opinion that Ksuba itself is Drabbanon. And the laws of the Ksuba now, which is going to define Jewish marriage, so all of the obligations and the commitments of a husband in marriage are reflected in the Ksuba. That's why it's very important for the Masada Kedusha to explain to the Chassan what he's getting into, because the ksuba is his ksuba as a commitment to her. He has to understand what he's committing to.
Mm-hmm.
The Rabbanut, by the way, here in Israel, is a very strange minhag. I never saw this in Chutz Laaretz. They have the chassan also sign on the ksuba. Below the signature, the two eidim, the chassan should sign. I never saw that in America, but I was Masada Kedusha many times. I never asked the chassan to sign. But here, you know, they have their own reasons and rules and so forth and so on. But in any event, the two witnesses are signed, but only after they hear from the chassan, and they also need a kabbalas kinyan, that he is committed to this marriage as written and described by the ksuba. So that's Kedas Moshe of Israel. In the case of Das Yehudis, when we're talking about the laws of modesty, so we have also the Das Yehudis, which is like Das Moshe, which means the rabbinic requirements of Jewish modesty. So if you want to look in the art scroll, for those of you who have an art scroll, if you don't, I'll just read it to you. It's a pretty short footnote. It's footnote number 2. And he writes the following: the code of Jewish modesty, which is called Das Yehudis, is the chaste means the modest conduct typical of Jewish women. And he gives various examples of those who violate this. Then he says the following: this is based on a Mishnah in Masechta Ksubis on Daf Ayin Beis. The Mishnah on Daf, I always remember Ayin Beis because that's Rashi Tevis of Azariah Berzon. Anyway, on page 72 in Masechta Ksuvis, the Mishnah speaks about a wife who transgresses Das Moshe. And what that means is she violates the Jewish marriage Da'oraisa, because again, we didn't add the word Yehudis. And that means that she feeds her husband Macholas Asura, something that he's not allowed to eat. Or she sleeps with him and she's a nida, and she doesn't, you know, she denies that information. So that's a violation of biblical law. Now it's very interesting because the phrase das Yehudis is indicative of a broader circle, a broader scope that includes even rabbinic law. And there are many rabbinic laws that she might violate if she doesn't live up to the standards of Das Yehudis. So it's very strange that our Gemara mentions Das Yisrael, Overes al Das, without mentioning Yehudis. It sounds like our Gemara is talking about a woman who violates the code of Jewish practice, which means Doraisa, and it doesn't say, or the code of Moshe. I mean, that wasn't even added, or Yehudis. So the Meiri says, I can't accept that. In other words, even though, again, let's admit that the truth in the Gemara in here in Masechta Sota leaves out the word Yehudis. I can't accept that there should be any hair's breadth of a difference in terms of a woman being guilty for violating Jewish law and losing her ksuba. There should be no difference between a Das Torah, or call it Das Moshe in this context, and Das Yehudis. And therefore the Miri says that the Mishnah refers to both, even though we don't have this. Rashi mentions only Jewish practice, and he seems to limit our discussion to that category where she violates biblical law, meaning she feeds him forbidden food. So I don't know what to do with this. I'm inclined to accept the Meiri, but you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable about why the Gemara didn't mention the phrase Das Yehudis. So in any event, what does this have to do with Masechta Sota? We're not learning Masechta Ksuvis, or are we? It seems like we're learning Masechta Ksuvis. Does she lose her Ksuva without a Hasra, or only after she violates the Hasra? Tashma, the answer to your question lies in our Mishnah. Why? Because our Mishnah says, quote, Arusa v'shomeris yavam. In these two cases, it says that lo shosos v'lo notlos ksuba. So let's go back to the Mishnah, and let's read the Mishnah once more on Daf Chav Gimel. Where is it? Chav Gimel Amid Beis, I believe. Yeah, Chav Gimel Amid Beis. And let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Arusa v'shomeres yavam lo shosos v'lo notlos ksuba. Which means the following. That although they're excluded from shosos, from the parsha of drinking, because it says tachas isha, but nevertheless, the kinui and the stira is still meaningful. And in what sense is it meaningful? She violates his stira, his kinui, and as a result, she can no longer resume her marriage relationship with her husband. He's going to have to divorce her. So even in these cases of Arusa and Shomer Siyamam, the Parsha of Sota, let's say two-thirds of the Parsha of Sota, will apply. She's excluded from drinking, but she is included in Kini and Stira, and therefore she loses her Ksuba because as a result of Kini and Stira, she can no longer live with her husband. Now why, who's guilty here in creating that situation in which she can no longer live with her husband? She's guilty, correct? Because I hope everybody has that. That's number one. You can't say you're learning Masechta Sota unless you know the answer to this question. Who is guilty for the situation which she can no longer have a relationship with her husband?
She
is guilty. That's because of her stira. You can't forget that. I mean, that's the Holy of Holies. That's the 13th. That's the tenet of the faith of Masechta Sota. Oh. So the Gemara says the following. It says lo shosos v'lo notlos ksuba, which means mishta hu delo shasya. She doesn't. She's excluded from drinking. But ha kinuye mekanyola. But the warning of kinuy she got, and she violated this warning, and she secluded herself with so and so. Is lamai? What is the purpose of the kinuy? This warning. If it's not going to be, it's not going to culminate in her drinking from the main Ararim, so it's futile. Lav, isn't it lahafsida ksubasa, right? It says lo shosos, but lo notlo says ksuba. Why lo notlo says ksuba? Because she violated the kinui. If that be the case, we see clearly that she loses ksuba because of the kinui. In other words, the Gemara thinks, forget about kinui. This woman secluded herself, she's a married woman, she secluded herself with another man. That's a violation of what Isra? Anybody know what that's called? When a woman, a married woman, is alone with another man, what's that Isra called? Anybody know what's it called? Starts with a Y, ends with a D. Yichud. Excellent. Yichud. So she violated the prohibition against Yichud. That itself is considered Overis Al Das. Why did the Mishnah have to tell me that she loses Aksuba as a result of Kinui, as a result of his warning? It must be that she loses Aksuba because she violated his warning. And now we come to the following conclusion, that a woman, even if she violates the laws, the code of modesty, she doesn't lose her ksuba, unless first she got what?
Warning.
A warning. Without the warning, she will not be mafsid the ksuba. We have to give her a chance to shape up. And that's what's happening over here. The Mishnah went out of its way.
This is a warning, and the question is on a general point of view, to give a chance to...
To rectify always.
To rectify, or is it, okay, maybe you don't know the rules, I'm going to explain you the rules.
Right. That's called lahavchin ben shogeg lemeisa.
It's a different way.
That logic appears in the Gemara Makkos within a different context. In the context of Overis Al Das, the Gemara assumes...
She's supposed to know.
Exactly.
And it just...
Exactly. I mean, she has to go...
You're not behaving
well. Did you ever hear of something called a kala class? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
I don't know if all... But I think according to the laws of the Rabbanut, you know, before a woman gets Jewish marriage here in the state of Israel, she has to go through at least one kala class. I forget exactly how many hours she needs. And they teach her the basics about what Jewish marriage is. So she went to a kala class. I'm just using that as a sign. So that we assume. But now we need a formal violation for which she's going to get punished. She's going to lose her ksuba. And that requires hasra.
When you say she loses her ketubah, that means they divorce. You can't be married without a ketubah, right?
Again, once she violates kinui, he has to divorce her because...
No, I'm talking about laws of modesty here. Like, she's like somehow being just like sewing in public.
Oh.
Sew in public. Now you say she can't have a ketubah. Does that mean I have to divorce because she violated the warning?
No. I don't think so. You're asking a different question. The Gemara says that... what's the language the Gemara called? Baal lebelo ksuba is my love kiilu baal bilas nus, that you need the ksuba. So you're asking, well, if she lost her ksuba, does he have to divorce her because he's not he might have to write a different ksuba? You know what? It could be that he'll have to write a different ksuba, but not for the same price. You understand what? But anyway,
it's a discount.
Just 1 second. You know where I'm both sides. If I can apologize, I'm just losing the train of thought. This Gemara is a logical train. Again, let's get back on the train for just a moment. All your questions are excellent, excellent. You'll take them out with Rabbi Meyer. I'm just kidding. But what I mean to say is the following. Let me just get back to the focus point. The Gemara wants to establish, based on our Mishnah, this is what I want to get my brain around, that from the Mishnah you can conclude that a woman does not lose her ksuba without a warning. Why? Because our Mishnah implies that there was kinui, and the kinui was halachically meaningful. It was valid. It registers on the halachic radar screen. Why? Because the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell you that she doesn't drink from the Meimararim in those two cases,
right,
implying that there is kinui, and the kinui, the Gemara thinks now, is relevant for her loss of ksuba. Because the Mishnah says lo shosos, but lo nodlo says ksuba. What's in between? There's like an empty space that we have to fill in between lo shosos and lo notlos es ksuba. And what's in the middle between the two, Rabosai? It starts with a kuf, ends with a yud.
Kinui.
You follow? Lo shosos. And now you have to add in brackets, but there was kinui, and it's effective. Why? Because ein notlos es ksubasa. Why is ein notlos es ksubasa? Because she violated the kinui. And the Gemara thinks that now we have a principle that she violated, that she loses her ksuba because she violated his kinui, and now we should derive the conclusion that a woman of Ersal Das needs what? Tricha Asrol Apsila Ksubasa Omer Abaye Lo. You're misreading the Mishnah. There's nothing in our Mishnah that would prove that the kinui here is for the purpose of her losing the ksuba. Forget about that. She'll lose the ksuba even without kinui. Why? Because she violates the Isur of Yichud. That's called Over Saldats. Mm-hmm. Why does the Mishnah need that kinui? For a different reason. Li Osra Olav. To establish that he can no longer resume his marriage relationship. So let's understand something very clearly. I mean, this has to be crystal clear. I'm going to ask you it as a question, but it's a trick question. Don't fall into my trap. Does a woman who's Overis al Das become prohibited to her husband and he can no longer live with her? Anybody? 50% chance you'll get the right answer. No, that's absolutely no. The fact that she was Overis al Das doesn't mean that she's Asur al Baila, that she can no longer resume her marriage relation with her husband. Again, David, you have a question since she lost the Ksuba. You know, how do we create a framework with a ksuba to allow? But I'm saying, leaving out ksuba for a moment, he does not have an iser prohibition of having a relationship with his wife just because she was Overis al Das. Overis al Das is very severe, and she has to shape up, and so forth and so on. He may decide to divorce her, and he may have grounds to divorce, I don't know. But one thing is for sure, it doesn't, the fact that she walked around with her hair uncovered or whatever she did, that doesn't mean that he can no longer have an intimate relationship with her. Not so in the case of Sota. And when I talk about Sota here, I mean even a Sota who doesn't drink from the Mei Merarim. The very moment that she violates the Kinui with Astira, yeah. he can no longer have that relationship with her.
She's forbidden.
She's forbidden to him.
Yeah.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. We called it, if you remember, Aglayim Ledov, if you remember that phrase.
Just,
wait one second, I'm going to lose my trend. Mm-hmm. So what is Abai saying over here? Abai is saying, no, you're not reading the Mishnah correctly. You filled in the blank. And you thought that missing blank, that missing piece in the Mishnah, was setting up her loss of a ksuba. No. The missing blank piece in the middle of the Mishnah is for the purpose of her generating an Isur Labayla. True, she lost her ksuba with or without kinui, according to this tzad in the Gemara. Because the Gemara is now advocating that she doesn't need a hasra, a warning. So she violated, you know, Das Yehudis the very moment that she went into a secluded area with another man and locked the door. But that's relevant to Ksuba. She loses her Ksuba. That's not relevant to the Isur al-Baila. What would clinch the Isur al-Baila? What is effective here to generate an Isur al-Baila, Rabosai?
Kinui.
That's what Abai is saying. Again, as far as Ksuba is concerned, she'll lose her Ksuba with or without kinui. We don't have to warn her. She was Overis al Das. She should have known better. And she loses her rights to the Ksuba. But if you ask me whether the marriage could continue, again, maybe we'll have to write a different Ksuba, but the marriage could continue, the answer is yes. Says the Mishnah, but kinui, if she violates the kinui, that's a whole different story. Because violating a kinui means automatically that she's Asur al Baila. And that leads us to Rav Papa. We have about 5 minutes. Let's finish in Rav Papa. So we have the whole sugya. I'm very excited that we got this far. I get these WhatsApps from I don't know where he is now. I don't know. Does anybody know if he's in LA or in Chicago? I don't know. He has this very complicated itinerary. So I never know where he's WhatsApping me. How's it going with Sota? So I said, you know what? The only thing I can tell you is that we're drinking this bitter stuff over here. That's all I can tell. Papa Omar, Lash Kosa Kishahina Sua. Wow. This is a new pshat now, Mishnah. Rabosai, this is so exciting. Listen to what happens. We said that in the case of an Arusa, she doesn't drink from Mei Merarim. That's not so true. It's true, but not so true. Why? Mm-hmm. Because even though she's an Arusa and she won't drink from Mei Merarim, but we could set up the Mei Merarim while she's an Arusa. What do I mean to set it up? We'll give a kinui. So imagine what happens. She gets the kinui while she's an Arusa. At what moment does she violate the kinui? When she's in a suah. Now she's going to drink Mei Merorim based on the kinui that took place when? When she was in Arusa. That's how Rav Papa wants to read the Mishnah. Kedesanya, and he has a proof from a Braisa. Ein Mekanin LaArusa LaShkosuk She Arusa. The kinui is not effective during the state of Erusin before Nisu and before Chuppah to make her drink if she violates it during her Erusin. However, Aval Mekanin LaArusa LaShkosuk She Nisua. But the kinui is Chal, it's meaningful, it's valid, so that if she violates this kinui when she's in Nisua, she will drink from the Mei Merorim as a Nesua. This is unbelievable. So take a look at footnote number 6, and with that we'll have to sort of wrap it up because we're running out of time. But again, I'm a Rava. Oh my gosh, we didn't get to Rava yet. Okay. So if a wife was warned during Erusin against secluding herself with a certain man and she violated the warning after Nesuin, so again, the kinui took place when? During Erusin. The stira took place when? Nisuin. After Nisuin, during Nisuin, post Nisuin. She drinks from the Mei Merorim. And this is Rav Papa's insight, that an Arusa is excluded from stira if the kinui and stira took place during Erusin. But the kinui itself during Erusin is a valid kinui, and it registers to set up a stira if she secludes herself and violates the kinui with the stira during Nisuin. Why? Because even though the kinui took place during what? During Erusin. But that's okay because the stira took place tachas isha, which means after Nisuin. If the seclusion occurred after she entered into her husband's jurisdiction, that's called Nisuin, she becomes subject to the Sota test on the basis of the warning that she received during Erusin. So according to this explanation of our Mishnah, the warning is required for what purpose? For Shtia. Not for the purpose of her losing her ksuba. She'll lose her ksuba again, even without the Hasra, without the Kinui. Why do we need Kinui? So here Abai said we need kinui la osrolov, and Rav Papa says we need kinui lashkosa kishahi nesua. Okay, then we'll end here. I wish you all a great day.
Thank you.
Okay. Alan, can I trouble you just to open the door because I have a class. And,